The Tarncast, Tarncast. 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 It's the Tarncast, Tarncast. This is the Tarncast, Tarncast. The Tarncast, the Tarncast.
Hi, everybody. This is very special guest Todd Robert Anderson. This is the Tarncast, a show where the host is different every week, but the very special guest is always the same. I am the very special guest, and the host this week is nobody. There's no host. It's just the very special guest, which has been the case for the last, I don't know, 10, maybe not that many episodes. Nothing I can do about it. I don't have a lot of time to dig up hosts, but the good news is I've got a couple on the hook, because I always enjoy it more when there's a host, because then I just answer questions and I don't have to come up with stuff to say beforehand. But this is just me talking, so I got to talk. I got to tell you what's going on. And it's pretty simple. I'm going to have a sip of this beverage. Thirst quenching. Delish. Let's see. I had a job today, earlier today, a voiceover job. That's exciting. I was like doing voiceover jobs. Radio gig, commercial. Radio commercial. You know, they don't pay a lot, but, you know, it's nice just to book a job, because it's been a little while, and every actor goes through spells where they don't, you know, book for a while, but then they book something, and it's always nice. And although with voiceovers, because one time, if you read my book, Don't Act 101 Reasons Why You Shouldn't, I believe this story is in there somewhere, but I went on this one voiceover, one of the first voiceover jobs I ever had, and it was because it was a tie-in with an on-camera commercial. So I'd booked the on-camera commercial, shot it, went quite well, they were funny spots, but then they wanted to do a radio campaign. And a lot of times what they do with that is they'll take the concept and they'll just do a radio ad with other actors, seasoned voice professionals, as it were. But for some reason at this point, they were like, hey, let's hire these guys who did the on-camera spot and we'll have them do it. And in a lot of ways, the on-camera commercial worked because we were playing against the dialogue, which was sarcastic. It was sarcastic. And a way to play against sarcastic dialogue is to do it in a charming way and use your facial expressions and a wink or a nod or something to offset the biting nature of the dialogue itself. When you are on mic, it's not as easy to do that. It's not as easy to play sarcasm as fun and lovable. And also, admittedly, you know, I was sort of green, and so was the actress, I think, who did this tie-in radio spot with voiceover stuff. We were green with voiceover stuff. We were on-camera people coming into a voiceover booth and reading copy, and, you know, we were a little green there. But also, we were fighting against, you know, the nature of the copy, and it was hard. They kept coming back and giving us direction, and it wasn't working. And then they started giving us line readings, and that never goes well. And then at one point, they had left their patch open so we could hear them, and their boss wasn't happy with the way it was sounding. And they were having a phone meeting with him, and he was like, yeah, what's going on? They sounded so good on the TV commercial. They sound a little stilted here. And the producer said, oh, well, that's because these guys are terrible, terrible actors, which is, they were throwing us under the bus because what they had, they couldn't make work. And it wasn't the actor's fault, but they decided to blame it on us. And that happens quite a bit. You know, even in the big leagues, if a movie doesn't work, the actor, especially if it's a star vehicle, the star will get blamed. Oh, he doesn't have it anymore, you know. or she sucked in that. She ruined that movie. But a lot of times it's not the actor at all. It's the production itself. And a lot of times it's the writing, because it all starts with the writing. I mean, let's be honest. But so in this case, they threw us under the bus to the boss, and we could hear them. And of course, the actress that I was with started crying. It was kind of awful. It was really awful. So I realized today that when I went into this, and this was great. You know, I went in and we did it, and it, you know, but took a half hour, because this one from years ago, you know, we were in there for hours, just like trying to bang this thing out. And the longer you're in there, the worse it gets. You know, a lot of times in voiceover stuff, you know, you'll actually get the commercial and then they'll have you hang out for 20 minutes and play with ad-libbing and all that stuff to see what they can get. And they never, you know, almost never use the ad-libs, but they like to play. And it's fun, but it can, you know, after you've been reading the same copy for 45 minutes, it can become a little bit tedious and difficult to find the fun in it after a while. But this wasn't the case with this. They were smart. We did a little ad-libby stuff. But after, you know, they realized, you know, we got so much stuff in the can, we're good to go. And they were fun, and they were funny, and they were very complimentary. I mean, that goes a long way, too. Instead of going, no, can you do it like this? Can you do it like this? You know, you guys sound great. Let's make it a little quicker, a little slower, you know, whatever. Or, you know, hit this, don't hit that. Sort of notes are fine, especially if they're housed in this sounds great, this is going great, you know, that one was great, like along those lines, let's do this, you know, those kind of notes, and that you're like, wow, yeah, that this is fun. And the more encouragement, certainly, and I think this is super important when you're dealing with stuff that's funny, you know. It's one thing when you're working with something that's more straightforward, you don't. Yeah, I mean, certainly for me as an actor, if I'm working on a drama or something that's straight and not comedic, I don't need as much positive reinforcement, encouragement. I can just go and you can just give me a note, you know, and as long as you're not saying that was awful. But when you're doing comedy, it's like, and nobody's reacting and being positive and laughing, then you start to get insecure. It's impossible not to feel like you're bombing. So these guys were great, and, you know, I think they were being genuine about finding what we were doing very funny, and it was me and another actor. But there's, you know, maybe they were just being polite. I mean, certainly this other guy who I was in the booth with was very funny. You know, maybe they were just being complimentary to me because they felt like they had to because they were complimenting him. I don't know. You know, I don't know. I don't know. That's an actor's insecurity. Who knows? Who cares? There, you know, you let it go. But anyway, the point is it was fun. But when I walked in, I still have, and this like bad experience happened a decade ago now. And I still walk into these voiceover booths going, oh man, I hope I'm good. I hope this works. And I don't have that problem on camera. I don't. It's just more like a voice, because it's weird. And you're dealing with people over the airways. They patch in people from New York, and you're talking to them and you don't see them. And it's just, it's like you're working out something over the phone, and it's a little weird. And I mean, and for me, it's a little intimidating, and the thing is I do a lot of on-camera work, so I'm comfortable there. I don't do that much voiceover work. I get them here and there and I dig it, but I still have this sort of terror walking into the room that, oh God, they're going to turn on me, because of this one experience, which was, you know, and I know logically that whole thing wasn't my fault. It was them, and they were throwing us under the bus. But just the whole experience, when I walk into a room, a voiceover booth, I'm like, are these people going to be like that? Because you don't know. You're walking in. I mean, it's so weird when you – being an actor, you're constantly going on job interviews, job interview, job interview, job interview, job interview. It's constant. And then when you do book a job, especially in my case where it's one-day guest stars and commercials and voiceover stuff, where you're working for a day. In the case of voiceovers, just for a couple hours, but it's a new job. And you know what it's like. You remember the first day you walked in on your job. And you were like, I don't know how this is going to go. And then after a few weeks, you settle in. But I have to go in and try to settle in within 20 minutes, because this is the only day it's happening. So you're walking into a room filled with strangers. You don't know what the personalities are. You don't know what you're walking into. And that is just nerve-wracking. And then, you know, layer on top of that, just the first day of going into work, you're actually getting in front of people and performing, and you have to be amusing on some level to them. And you don't know who they are. You don't know. Any stand-up comic will tell you, you know, you can walk into a room and you can have your A game on and the audience just hates you because those are personalities that don't jibe with your sense of humor, you know, and that can always happen in an acting thing. So that's sort of a terrifying element of booking a job as you're walking in. It's like, I don't know. And I'm an insecure enough person to, you know, like think to myself, oh, they're lying to me. They're lying to me when they say good things, you know, just they're lying to me just to make me feel good so maybe I'll do better, but really they think I suck, you know. And I know, like, logically that's not true in most cases, but there's still, you know, a thing that happens to you where you're like, ah. And you know, most actors have it, and I think, you know, and actors always get accused of, well, actors are always so insecure, but how many people are comfortable with public speaking? You know, how many people who in other walks of life who aren't actors are into public speaking and they don't get nervous? Everybody gets terrified when they have to get up and do public speaking. Unless you do it all the time, every day, and it's your living, then you get comfortable with it. But most people don't have that. They do it here and there, and most actors do it here and there. Most of what we do is audition. You get very comfortable in the audition situations, depending on the audition. Like, I'm not super comfortable in theatrical auditions, but I'm super comfortable in commercial auditions because I get commercial auditions all the time. I don't get theatrical auditions as much, and that's just normal with auditions, you know, and actors. But, you know, I get a little bit more nervous in the theatrical ones than I do the commercial ones, just because it's not something you do. And when I say public speaking all the time, I mean, that's what you do from 9 to 5. You're just talking in front of people. Then you get some comfort. But if there's a couple days in between, you get nervous. So imagine living a life where that's your life, public speaking. And I challenge you to imagine yourself not being insecure. All right? All right, so that's actors' insecurity and my post-traumatic stress disorder regarding voiceover jobs. That's the first part of this hostless podcast. Now, I'm going to move on to another thing after I have another sip of my beverage. Very dry throat because the weather's been so weird the last few weeks. It fluctuates, and then I get all snotty, and then my throat gets dry, and it's a beverage. Beverage. All right, the second part of this is I've been seeing a lot of this, reading a lot of this Kickstarter stuff, and I just worked on a short film that was funded through Kickstarter, but these were guys who aren't famous, who just wanted to make a short film, who were basically saying to their friends, you know, hey, would you kick in a few shekels so we can make this sci-fi horror short film and see if we can get it in some festivals and stuff? And their friends went, oh, yeah, we love you guys. You guys are great. And they got some money that way. But it wasn't a tremendous amount of money. I mean, it's their friends. And, you know, and I'm always like, I'm weird about the whole Kickstarter thing because I don't want, you know, to people's charity to go to me. You know what I mean? I want it to go to starving children. I don't want it to go to my, you know, pet projects. I want it, you know, to go to education or something. But, you know, there's no way around it. If you don't have money and you want to make something, you got to get money from people. So that's one way to do it. Kickstarter. Or just have a really rich friend who you can talk to. But then lately there have been celebrities who have started Kickstarter campaigns, either to get a movie version of their canceled TV show done, or just their own vanity project that they want to do, and they're not going to pay for it out of pocket, because, you know, and I understand that because they're not ludicrously rich, but it also just strikes me as strange to instead of, you know, trying to pitch rich people, which I'm pretty sure they have access to, or the studios or whatever, their projects, they kickstart through fans, you know, and so many of these fans probably don't have that much money, but they're such huge fans. And I, you know, it's their money, I guess, but there's something icky about that to me. You know, if you have all this money and you're wealthy and you really don't need to work that much again, you know, you can just go do acting gigs here and there because people still want you to do them and you pay for them. But you have your own vanity project that you won't fund yourself, but you ask your fans to fund. I don't know. I mean, I'm on the fence about this thing, you know, because, I mean, is it okay to start? Can I just kickstart some because I want something? Can I do that? Can I have a Kickstarter campaign because I want to go on a shopping spree at Target? Is that right? Or is that taking advantage of people? I mean, and you can make the argument that, yeah, well, this is showbiz and a sucker is born every minute. And those celebrities who want to do these vanity projects are just taking advantage of the suckers who are born every minute. But they're suckers who love you, man. And is that what you do to someone you love, is just sucker them into taking your money? I don't know. The whole thing, and I get it. I mean, the argument that I've heard from them is, you know what? I'm not rich. I'm not Robert Downey Jr. I didn't just get paid $50 million. You know, I made a good living on a show for a while and I make a decent living now, but I don't have the millions of dollars it takes to fund a movie. And I get that, you know, I totally get that. But I mean, I don't know. I'm not as wealthy. I mean, and we're talking about wealthy people. We're not talking about poor people who are trying to kickstart something, get a career going. I'm talking about wealthy, semi-famous to very famous people who don't necessarily have $5 million, you know, that they can just spend without, you know, suddenly being less rich than they are now. But that's the sacrifice they don't want to make for their personal project, because they probably do have $5 million sitting in a bank somewhere, but they don't want to spend it on a movie because movies tend to lose money. It's not a good investment. So they ask their fans to invest in them. It's different if you're poor and you're asking your friends and your friends are just trying to help out. That feels more communal. But when it's your fans, like strangers who, if you saw on the street, I mean, you might sign something, but you're not going to hang out with those people. You're not going to make friends with them. You know, they're not your friends. They're your quote unquote fans. People who like your work, but you're rich and you won't gamble on yourself. So you're taking the suckers and having them gamble on you. I don't know. I mean, all I'm saying is if that's the road you choose to take, and I don't know that, I mean, and like I say, I don't know, maybe one day I'll be ludicrously rich and have $5 million and say, no, I want to make a movie, but I don't want to spend my money on it. So maybe I'll ask all the idiots who out there who like me for reasons I don't even understand to give me money. But I'd like to think probably not, probably find some other way to raise money. You know, I would probably, because once you're wealthy, you have access to the wealthiest of people a lot of times, and you can go to them and you could say, here's this project, I'm really passionate about it. You have money, you fart money, so maybe just fart out a few million dollars for me to make this thing, and it's going to be really good. And I have enough of a fan base that they'll actually pay for the movie, and you'll at least make your money back, you know, over time. It's just going to take time. And then maybe the rich person will be like, I like this. This is supporting the arts. And I like supporting the arts. I bought a painting the other week and it's lovely. And it would be lovely to invest in this movie. You know, that makes a little bit more sense to me. But because the wealth is so poorly distributed right now. But to go to your fans, a lot of which who probably don't have money and spend their last dime to make sure they have cable or Netflix so they can keep watching your crap, to ask them for money for your pet product. Am I wrong here? Am I off base? It just seems a little disingenuous, cheap, a cheat. And the other reason Kickstarter, you know, and podcasts and everything. And I've said this before on this podcast, but the reason why those things are great is it gives the struggling artist and the amateur and the fanboy who dreams of one day being like a place to do these things. But the more celebrities start using these things like Kickstarter and podcasting and YouTube, there are famous people with YouTube channels now. The more famous people take advantage of those things because it's easy for them, because they've already got a built-in fan base. It's easy for them to start making money off of these ventures right away. And then all the viewership starts gravitating towards those. And then the amateurs and the people who are actually trying to start something or get something going are suddenly left out in the cold, because the audience that they had for their stuff has left them for the familiarity of actors. I mean, because we are a capitalist nation and we are all brought up on brand name recognition, you know, so there's a comfortability in going to see famous people, even when the famous people, all quite often, all they put out is junk. It's not even good. I'm not going to name names because, you know, I might want to work with these people for the money. But there are a lot of people who continue to churn out stuff that people generally, I hear, don't like. It's sort of like how the our U.S. government did not put in restrictions on buying guns recently, even though what was like 87% of the population of the country was behind that legislation. They put a kibosh on it, you know. That is cruel and unusual punishment of the rich, of the rest of us, because they have all the money and power. Now they're just actually ignoring us. And I feel like there's an element to that in some of the famous people who start Kickstarter campaigns. And I'm not saying all of them. Some of them might be down on their luck and trying to get something going again, and, you know, whatever. But the whole thing is suspect to me. And you're stealing platforms from people who... And part of the interesting thing about podcasts and Kickstarter movies that aren't famous people and YouTube videos that aren't for famous people is you're getting all these new voices. And the wealthy always find a way of choking those people out. And it's... Part of it is us, really, because we are also the consumers of these things. And... You know, Norm MacDonald started his show, and I listen to it. I like Norm MacDonald, but I still also listen to a lot of other stuff that isn't just famous people. But I think that the more and more famous people that glom onto these popular technologies that have been allowing amateurs or struggling professionals to get their voices out there and heard and get seen and maybe have something happen, the more the celebrity is that's out there, the less time there will be for the non-celebrities, because the viewership will drift towards them, because as consumers, like I say, we're conditioned to do that. What was my point here? I don't even know what my point was anymore. I've talked myself into just directionless aggravation, and I'm ashamed, and really all I'm saying is, okay, let me just say one more thing before I wrap this up. I am not the kind of guy who is complaining about not getting heard, seen, / the other thing, simply because I want to be famous, successful, all those things. I really just like the work. If I'm never famous and I'm working all the time, I'm fine. You know, it's the problem is the middle class in the entertainment industry has been as choked out as the middle class in any other place. I mean, it's not an exception here. So a lot of that, I think, is celebrity culture. Just constantly, every time something gets popular, celebrities usurp that technology and make it a celebrity thing. And then pretty soon, that's all you see. The same faces over and over again. Same ones who you see at the multiplex, you see on the YouTube channel, you hear on the podcast network, you see starting Kickstarter campaigns. And I don't like it. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. I don't know. You know, it's like if you start up a baseball game, you know, with a bunch of regular baseball players, just from the neighborhood, just kids, you know. Hey, let's get a Sandlot game going. And then professional baseball players walk by and they're like, oh, that's a baseball game. Everybody's having fun. Hey, we should do this and get people to come watch it. And then they come in and they build a Sandlot next to your Sandlot, you know, and they're really good at baseball and you're only kind of good at baseball, but people were still enjoying watching you play baseball because it was the love of the game thing. But now these professional people are going, and then the media goes there because that's who the media likes. They like famous people. They're not looking for the next big thing ever. They're looking for the big thing that already was, and how can we make this big thing controversial and blah, blah, blah. So what I'm saying is, if you see kids playing in a Sandlot, just go and enjoy the game. You, the famous person, can go and watch the game and enjoy the kids playing the game. You don't need to start a game next door and take the attention away. Seriously. What kind of thing is that to do to children playing baseball in a Sandlot? My good Lord. Lord. Toncast.